Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of The Sound of Science. My name is Julia Zimbauer, and I'm the creator and host of this podcast. In the fourth episode of The Sound of Science, we will be discussing the role of songwriting as a therapy and as a stimulant for individuals, and we will also be unpacking what our brain likes in songs. Additionally, we will be diving into the realm of subliminal music and figuring out how these hidden messages can affect us. But before we start, make sure to subscribe to the podcast as well as follow it on Instagram under The Sound of Science, with underscores between each word. Without further ado, let's get into this episode. From the surface, songwriting might seem like a simple hobby. However, this practice can be used as a significant tool into understanding oneself and also uncovering emotions that are hard to surface otherwise. At the artist level, songwriting offers a space for artists to express opinions and thoughts on issues from personal to global. The vulnerability that artists show in their music and their songwriting can connect greatly to listeners and can really resonate deeply with them. Two strong examples that come to mind are Olivia Rodrigo with her Sour album, which was about a breakup, and also Chapel Roan, who writes a lot of music stemming from her experiences as a gay woman coming from a homophobic town. These two artists use the vulnerability of their experiences to express themselves, but they also provide a space for similar people to understand their own lives through music. As someone who has personally been writing music for 6 years, I have utilized the tool of songwriting to understand my obstacles and also put them forth in a way that is creative and can foster somewhat of a community of connection. In particular, throughout high school, I used songwriting as somewhat of a form of therapy where I would encourage myself to write music about issues I was actively going through. Having this constructive outlet was extremely beneficial in uncovering new areas of discovery about myself that hadn't been previously brought to attention. Songwriting can actually be used to unpack traumas, and there are even forms of therapy, both individual and group therapies, that can do so. For example, songwriting interventions are a form of music therapy where certified therapists will utilize a fill-in-the-blank songwriting method to patients. These clients are called to fill in specific words in a popular song that is usually individually chosen per the client's music taste. These blanks in their favorite songs are strategically placed in areas where the responses can be particularly powerful and telling. And this can change the direction of the song's meaning, as well as add in somewhat of a metaphorical symbolism. Another type of therapy is similar to this, but it involves a group setting and a collective lyric creation. These songwriting therapies can provide a really great place for people to unpack their baggage in a constructive and a creative manner in an environment that may seem less intimidating than other forms of therapy. Songwriting stimulates multiple parts of the brain, and a few of these areas have been discussed in previous episodes. For starters, the amygdala, which is the emotional processing center, can act as a place to restructure thinking and reactions to vulnerable topics and experiences that can be expressed in writing music. Second, the hippocampus is affected, which again is another area of the brain that we've covered in previous episodes. But for any people that are new around here, it's the part of the brain that is involved in processing memory. Recalling possibly traumatic or uncomfortable feelings and situations can help songwriters take experience and turn it into a powerful form of expression and connection. Third, the prefrontal cortex is involved with decision-making and behavior, so songwriting can allow for individuals to restructure their thinking around certain events and express it in music. Somewhat of a musical catharsis. Lastly, the fourth big area that is affected is the cerebellum, which correlates to emotion, but is more importantly known to correlate to physical movement, which can play a role in unpacking certain types of trauma. Let's get into what the brain likes in songs. There are certain structures, song forms, and time signatures that the brain is drawn to. When there are patterns in music, like a similar song form, or if there are overarching themes to be discovered, our brain is automatically going to want to start decoding this structure. When the structure of music is decoded, it's almost like an aha moment, and dopamine is released in the brain, and dopamine is the reward transmitter. Because of this brain reward, there are specific song forms that have actually stood the test of time. One of the most widely noticed structures is commonly referred to as verse, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, chorus, and then bridge, chorus. I know that was kind of a lot. So these song structures can actually be simplified with letters. So A is usually assigned to verses, B, chorus, and C is a bridge. From the prior example, the simplified structure could be referred to as AB, AB, CB. And as a songwriter myself, this is probably the most commonly recognized for me personally, and it reflects the structure I usually feel most comfortable writing in. A second popular structure is AA, BA, BA, which is verse, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse. A song that reflects this structure is Yesterday by the Beatles. And also to make this clear, these are not the only song structures that the brain likes. In fact, it can vary audience to audience. But these examples mentioned are noticeable structures that have lasted a long time. Another section of songs that the brain likes are choruses. Known for the repetition in songs, choruses provide an area for individuals to recall, remember, and sing familiar parts of the song collectively. The brain likes group connection, and choruses are a place for communities of people to feel collectively seen and understood with the song lyrics. I have seen this firsthand at concerts where the whole audience will connect over a chorus. I actually just came from a Benson Boone concert a couple weeks ago, and he performed an incredibly emotional song about a loved one passing. Every person I looked to in the audience was completely connected to the lyrics and the meaning. And every time the chorus came back, more and more people were joining in with him, and it added almost an entirely new layer of emotional depth to this concert atmosphere. People were singing, crying, and connecting over the same song, even if it had different individual meanings and impacts on people in their personal lives. Now, if we look back to the brain, there's another specific area of songwriting that the brain responds to, and this is actually time signatures. According to an article by ASCAP, humans have a tendency to like the number 4, particularly in tempo and in time. The brain also likes sticking to consistency, so stable songs, such as those with a consistent time signature like 4-4, are positively received. Why is this the case? 4-4 is a time signature that is commonly used in most pop songs, so it's easy to recognize, but it's also really easy to predict. Additionally, ASCAP even pulls on nursery rhymes and the physical rhythm of us being bipeds as to why we are drawn to these time signatures that are either the simple 4-4 or the number 4 is used in other feats like a 4-bar section of instrumental or a 4-bar solo. And also, don't just think that music structures are the most important to our perception. Lyrics actually have a great deal of impact on our brains. A study conducted by Jeff Luck in 2016 explored the emotional connotation of music with and without lyrics. Using fMRI scans, sad music with lyrics and happy music with lyrics were compared to happy or sad instrumental music. The results were very interesting. Sad music with lyrics were proven to be the most impactful on the limbic system, which is the system that helps a great deal with emotional processing. Sad music with lyrics also activates a part of the brain called Brodmann Area 47, which helps with the processing of emotions and words. And this area was activated to a greater extent with sad music with lyrics than happy music with lyrics. Jeff Luck explains this phenomenon, stating that people will tend to pay more attention to negative lyrics because they elicit more powerful emotional responses. The stronger the emotional response from a particularly powerful set of lyrics, the more we tend to like the musical piece. Now that we are fully aware of the impacts of songwriting on the brain, I wanted to pivot to another extremely interesting topic: subliminal messages in music. I know that I personally am just getting familiar with the subject, so I do want to provide a little bit of background as to what subliminal music messaging is. A subliminal in music is traditionally defined as a hidden message, usually through lyrics or through sound, that is played at a volume or a frequency too low for humans to consciously recognize it. In general, subliminals can be used for a lot of different reasons, from personal growth to advertising and to music. In our case, music subliminal messages can be hidden in songs for a variety of reasons. And there are even some artists that will put messages in music for their fans to discover. Billie Eilish, for example, hides sneak peeks of her songs' names in her music with subliminal messaging. It's almost like a fun cryptic puzzle for her fans to decode. Sometimes these hidden messages can be intentional by artists, like Billie, who insert them to provoke curiosity amongst fans. Other times, however, it can be purely incidental, and people can start creating theories surrounding music and their underlying meanings. One of the most commonly used forms of subliminal music messaging is called backmasking. This is where a message is recorded and then played backwards on a finalized music composition. When you play it forward, you don't hear it, but when you reverse it, you will hear the message. These messages may not be consciously perceived by us, but we can hear it subconsciously, and sometimes even have physical and emotional reactions to it. The Beatles were the initial creators of this technique, utilizing it on the Revolution 9 album. Backmasking caught the eye of many conspiracy theorists, who accused many musicians of hiding satanic messages in their songwriting. One of these examples is with Stairway to Heaven, where Led Zeppelin was accused of backmasking satanic phrases in the middle of the song. If you Google subliminal messaging in songs, there is an insane amount of digging that people have done to prove that there are unsettling messages in certain songs. In 1982, a bill was even proposed surrounding rock music that was accused of having backmasking satanic messages. They thought that it had a detrimental effect on teenagers, so they proposed a bill. And the bill didn't pass, but there was a massive uproar surrounding the morality of music with possible subliminal messaging. In my opinion, I do think it's a little bit unfortunate to pin such a negative connotation to not just subliminals, but to certain musicians, because there is a lot of positive power subliminal messaging can have in music, and it seems to be overlooked by these conspiracy theorists. Using subliminals in songwriting can actually be really interesting and potentially beneficial. Bijan Nerose, who is a scientist and musician, enforces this exact ideology. Since our subconscious has been found to drive a lot of our daily life, around 95%, there is a hidden amount of power in subliminal messaging. A great form of this are positive affirmations, where positive messages are played at a low frequency on music tracks. According to Nerose, this type of music can be beneficial at reprogramming our subconscious, and it can potentially lead to changed action consciously. The impact of subliminal messages are not a newly researched feat either. There are actually multiple studies done in the 1990s about the power of subliminal messaging in audio. And within a particular set of studies done in 1989, it was found that messaging below the listening threshold can have a potential to affect our bodies, with heart rate and skin response. even though this particular area of subliminal messaging doesn't have a finalized strong correlation, it remains an area of investigation and interest. Let's dive into the why of why our subconscious is able to be shaped by these messages. A big reason for the power of subliminal messaging is neuroplasticity, which we previously discussed in our first two episodes. Neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to change over time and strengthen new connections, forget connections, and lose certain ones entirely. When we regularly hear music with positive subliminal messaging, like self-esteem boosting affirmations, our brains can start to rewire with these thoughts and messages. These subconscious messages can directly speak to our neural connections. The other most common theory has to do with implicit and explicit memory formation. Implicit memory is the type of memory that is formed effortlessly and subconsciously, and it often involves skills or habits. Explicit memory involves actively using the conscious to remember skills. When it comes to subliminal messaging, there are arguments suggesting that the brain can store information from subliminals into their implicit memory, and it can consequently affect their actions, thought patterns, and behaviors. Again, since this is a highly debated topic, the impact of subliminals doesn't have a single clear correlation to our bodies, but this still remains a big area of investigation. In summary of this episode, songwriting can be a form of therapy where individuals can unpack and reassess their experiences through the power of writing. Additionally, songwriting can be a form of connection from artists to listeners, and the structure of music, such as the power of the number 4, the impact of choruses, and lyric creation, can have certain impacts on the brain. Artists can also utilize the tools of subliminal messaging to impact their fans and make their music more interesting. But subliminal music messages have a myriad of other uses, such as self-esteem boosting or behavior changing. Because subliminal music messages reach our subconscious, many argue that audio and subliminals can reprogram our brain through neuroplasticity, and it can affect our implicit memory. All in all, there is still a lot of research left to be done on the correlation of subliminals to the brain, but the current findings are really thought-provoking in and of themselves. Thank you all so much for listening to the fourth episode of The Sound of Science. I hope you've all learned some new information on the impacts of songwriting, both as an artist and an audience, and also how subliminal music messages work. I'm very excited to take you guys on this journey with me, and I hope you're enjoying the course of topics we've been exploring in these episodes. Stay tuned for the next episode of The Sound of Science, which will be coming out in about 2 weeks. But for now, make sure to subscribe to the podcast as well as follow it on Instagram under The Sound of Science, with underscores between each word. That's it for today, and I'll see you guys next time.